Welcome to That's Your Opinion.
And you're wrong.
And we're back after a month of pride. We are in wrath. Welcome back, folks.
I hope that y'all had a good Pride Month, whatever you got up to. Pride in Reno is celebrated in July, so that's a thing. So Pride really hasn't quite ended, so that's the kind of the afterglow of Pride in our neck of the woods. But where you're at, if you've had your Pride and maybe you partook in events, I hope you had fun.
I mean, Pride never really ends, though, does it?
Nah, it's every day.
So celebrate it, be loud, unite, all that fun stuff. So we're going to be haters today. So a sharp turn from our message of unity, but we're just going to be haters today.
Yeah, we need to just, you know, we have our little disclosures, right? This is our main one today. Mm-hmm. If you're ready for some of that, then buckle in.
Mm-hmm. So we got a lovely email from a listener asking us to review the show on HBO Max, which is now just called Max because
reasons
we HBO's don't know. I don't know, called Velma.
Mm-hmm.
So
where to begin?
So part of today's episode is going to be unpacking Velma. Spoiler alert, we didn't finish it.
Yeah, it was
terrible.
Very unwatchable. I was about to say moderately unwatchable. I'm like, let's just, it was unwatchable.
No, it was incredibly bad.
It was very bad.
So we're going to discuss that and why we thought it was awful.
Yeah.
And then we're going to discuss the movie Bros that we watched on a whim, honestly. And yeah, we're just going to see where this conversation takes us. I don't have a premise for today other than, okay, no, I take that back. My premise for today is your opinion is wrong, that millennials aren't funny. We just want good entertainment.
Uh-huh. Yes. And your opinion is wrong that political correctness just doesn't matter for the sake of bad jokes. There is something to be said about not being offensive just to be offensive, or not saying things that could be hurtful just because you can, and you feel like the youth that watch it will laugh.
Yar.
Which they're not. They're overwhelmingly saying this is not entertaining.
Very bad.
Yeah, very bad. So I think that premise is wrong.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so overview of Velma. So, for those that don't know, and I hope you don't know, because, and you skipped this awful TV show, it is a remake of Scooby-Doo.
Mm-hmm.
But it's adult? Yeah, more adult than regular Scooby-Doo. There is no Scooby.
No. Let's take the loose premise of what the show, original show was, try to add some layers. Still not really have clear plot points, though, and just be chaotic in new ways.
Yeah.
Miss the mark a lot.
Yeah. So it centers around Velma, who is voiced by Mindy Kaling, who also wrote the show.
Mm-hmm.
This will come in important in a bit when we talk about Bros, because Mindy Kaling and Billy Eichner, who wrote Bros, are from a similar school of entertainment. They're also around the same age, I do believe.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something uniting in that. That's kind of a theme of today's discussion. So you have Velma, who is Indian in the show. And she just sucks. She just really sucks.
Unlikable.
Deeply unlikable. She's mean. She'll say these little like side comments that are supposed to be funny, but they're just digging.
They're not funny. And then there's this interplay with her and other characters where they just are terrible to her, and it's just this like cycle of gross and really just offensive things and things that make no sense. I'm like, why is this being said? Why is this happening?
Exactly.
Was most of the show.
And I would say spoilers, but also no one's going to watch this. So spoilers for those of you that are masochists. So there's also Daphne, who is mixed. She's white and Asian, and her parents are lesbians who are just the worst police ever, which is a very interesting thing there. But she's also like the popular rich girl.
Yeah.
And like a main plot for her is that she's adoptive and she's trying to figure out like what happened to her original parents, which is weird. Oh, and then Velma's mom died or is murdered.
Yes. And she
She thinks her mom was murdered.
Yes. And that she has a lot of guilt around that because she thinks she was to blame for what happened to her
mom. And she was able to solve it, which is also never really, we didn't watch all of it. Maybe it's addressed. But for the 7 episodes we watched, it is not addressed on why she thinks she should have solved this. It just keeps popping up. And then there's Shaggy, who goes by Norville, which is actually his real name, Norville Rogers. But he's like simping for Velma. He's also got this weird online following and this something going on with cheese. So I don't really know what that's all about. And his dad's a therapist.
Yeah.
Who's also white. Also, no one in this show, all their parents are interracial.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's so interesting.
Which I have nothing against that. It's just a weird, like, why are every single character's parents interracial? All of them. Weird.
Yeah.
So anyway, Norville, Shaggy's dad, is the therapist, and they have an entire episode that is dedicated to just making fun of his dad being a therapist. There's at one point Velma says something, or Norville says something connected with like, with medium power comes medium responsibility.
How
therapists are in charge of people's lives or something.
I remember we heard that and we were like, medium power? What? That's a lot. That's an opinion right there.
It's an opinion. And I think it's one of my opening confusions about this show. I have no clue what the viewpoint's supposed to be.
No, it's a little... So I was thinking about just the vibe of the show, words I'd use to describe it, and I do think sloppy is appropriate. I was even sort of reading some of the reviews about the art styling and how some of the way that the art was done in the show is really cool, reminiscent of other shows, but that the consistency wasn't there, and it was a bit confusing and distracting at times. And I think that's true for the plot points and the commentary and so much more in the show.
I agree. I think sloppy connects very well with this. I think it was trying really hard to find things that younger people find funny, or making fun of younger people. And like with this, I could think of like how sometimes older generations think that younger people are too obsessed with mental health. Like, they think everything is a mental illness and whatever. So I could see that being a part to poke at. But it seemed really out of place for the general tone of the show, which originally I thought was more related to, oh, we need to have more diverse stories. That's why we have so many diverse characters here. Oh, we forgot about Freddy.
Oh, yeah.
So, in relation to the more diverse characters, the only one that isn't is Freddy.
Oh my gosh.
Freddy is white, and it is heavily insinuated that he's, like, the hunk of the high school. But he's the tiniest, twerpiest, twinkiest, most annoying person ever. Yeah. And Velma is deeply in love with him.
It's going to be that forever unrequited love story.
But there's that point where he reads a feminist book and then becomes a feminist.
Oh,
and now he's simping for Velma, which Velma doesn't want. So yeah. Then we have this fun trope of like, oh, I don't actually want someone that treats me like a person. I want the person that was treating me terribly. Like, again, what is your viewpoint?
Yeah.
This show.
And you read a book and you're suddenly a feminist? What?
Right.
Like, I believe all these things.
Very misguided.
Yeah.
Which, okay, sure. We've all met that person mm-hmm. at one time or another of they read something and becomes their entire personality. That's fine. People do that. But, like, is the show trying to say that that's the bad thing? Or are they mm-hmm. trying to say that Velma changing her mind about whether or not she likes him because he's being nice to her, is that the bad thing? Mm. Is ignoring Norville the bad thing? Like, I don't understand what's supposed to be the negative thing here.
Because there's so many, right? I think it's so hard to parse through. And I feel like I almost wanted there to be this example of like just a healthy love of like, hey, you're you, this is all of you. And I like that. I'm into it. I didn't have to read a book and then somehow like suddenly, you know, be interested in you for a very specific reason, but it's limited time only. If the stars align, then we could maybe have a relationship that's going to dissolve. Like, why can't it just be, I don't know, what happens in life sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, if you like the terrible, twinky, white, mm-hmm. privileged, awful man, like him. Do that. Like, that is within your power.
Yeah.
Whatever. But it's held as such a negative here. Mm-hmm. To like, I am shameful of my attraction to Freddy because he's gross. Like, okay, mm-hmm. girl.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us got celebrity crushes that are gross.
Right. We all have those. That's true. Mm-hmm.
And then it's also insinuated that Velma is super into Daphne. And then Daphne is either a lesbian or bisexual. It's never really clarified what exactly is there. There's just a weird situation where Velma's like, oh, I guess we could just like hook up now. Velma's like, no. And Daphne's like, no. And I'm like, again, where is this supposed to be going?
Where is this going? And also just the way that they talked about like kissing or not. It was just very weird. It was almost like, well, okay, is this like your sexuality or are you just like curious? I want to do this. Let's just do it. Wait, I didn't ask for consent. It was just weird. It was very awkward, which, you know, at that age, like it's awkward sometimes. We've all had those situations. And also they made these choices to do these things in very specific ways that just left us scratching our heads.
Yeah, we also have no clue how old they are really.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually make... We know they're in high school.
Yeah. So we have a guesstimate, but...
But...
It's a range.
Even mm-hmm. then, that's kind of confusing.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have to address the Scooby in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Which is... probably like episode 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We find out that Norville has a girlfriend now.
Mm-hmm.
This person appears out of nowhere. Up until this point, he mm-hmm. was hardcore simping for Velma. So this person appears out of absolutely nowhere.
It's true.
She is black. And they did her dirty on her cornrows, but they are terrible. They start in the middle of the back of her head. So yeah. Not a single black person was on the animating team. I'm just gonna throw it out there.
It's true.
And she is probably the healthiest thing that's in this entire show.
Yeah. She's the least chaotic person of all of them.
Deeply, yes. Just 100% that. She's just into Norville.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks he's nerdy and cute.
Yeah. It's very pure.
That's it. Mm-hmm. And Velma can't stand it.
Mm-mm. Nope. And that was a big commentary on the show is, where is Scooby?
Mm-hmm.
Where's Scooby? And then suddenly this character appears, and when looking into reviews and things online, everyone is, a lot of people are calling this a conspiracy or, you know, this theory has leaked of this character being Scooby.
Which, I mean, it's fair.
Mm-hmm.
There's no animal in the show to mm-hmm. be Scooby, and Scooby's entire thing is that he loves Shaggy.
Mm-hmm.
They're besties, they do everything together. So you produce a character mm-hmm. who loves Shaggy and wants to do everything with Shaggy. We're just going to immediately associate exactly. that this person is probably Scooby.
Yeah.
And whether or not they meant it on purpose, it's another part of it. This was very sloppily done. Like, yeah. Someone should have noticed.
Definitely.
Or thought about, like, Oh, did we just make the black woman a dog?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually not hard to figure that out and prevent that.
Yeah, minimal effort, actually.
Very minimal.
To just... I don't know, like...
Yeah, did you make the show in a vacuum?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nonsense and ignorance? Like, it's weird.
Yeah, and it raises, like... When it came out, there was a lot of hate watching
mm-hmm.
of Velma. And a big story about this that came out was it was almost instantly renewed for a second season.
Mm.
Regardless of how many people were upset about it or whatever, da da da. But then other shows, really beloved shows, were canceled. And there's a weird discussion to be had about, like, what media is allowed to exist and what media is not allowed to exist.
Yeah.
And how much is it actually our goal is to make good stories, or our goal is just to get people to watch.
Right. Yeah. If people are watching and there's quote-unquote engagement, well, then it gets renewed. Regardless of the reason, or like if it's because people are just so upset with it. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're right.
Like, are people going to watch the second season? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are going to be like, oh, is it worse than the first season? Let's see. Meanwhile, I forget what show it was. People were just really upset. Was gotten rid of. But this show. Mm. Raised by Wolves.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Is a sci-fi show on HBO, which was really inventive. It has a really cool plot of humanity have been sent into the space to, like, find somewhere to live, and they've been sent with these androids that were more or less human on the outside,
mm-hmm.
but really didn't have, like, human emotions or code or anything. So they were raising this new generation of children, and over time, one of the androids comes to really identify with the role of being mother and being really protective and all this stuff. And it's going to be just really interesting examination of, like, so where is the border between humanity? What makes something human? Does it have to be born to be a human, or can you evolve into having a human humanhood, personhood? So that show was canceled after two seasons, even though rave reviews, people love the show, and we'll never get a finale to that, and Velma exists.
It's so disappointing. I can't tell if when I was younger we had our own version of this, of the chaotic shows, but also I'm old enough that we didn't have streaming, so I really don't have necessarily something to compare it to. But I'm just feeling disappointed that shows that are deep or, like, really, you know, could make an impact positively in our society, like, get cut short. Even if they run many seasons, they don't have the staying power of the tropey sitcoms or other things, you know? And it comes down to numbers a lot of the times.
Yeah, sometimes it's numbers, but sometimes I think it's streaming services benefit from having new stuff to pull new people in to make more subscribers.
It's true.
And cable didn't have that problem.
Yeah.
Whether or not you watch it is irrelevant because cable paid for it, so it's going to run. And someone was making that comment on a different podcast I was listening to of how, like, shows these days aren't given the time to build... to work out the kinks,
mm-hmm.
because if the first two seasons in our current situation aren't good, then you're axed. Yeah. And they don't have time to build a following.
Right.
And that's actually something relatively new, because I remember thinking about Parks and Recreation, which is one of my favorite shows. The amount of people that I've told, don't watch the first season, the first season's bad. And then they fixed it all, the second season.
Yeah.
The writing was better, the jokes were better, it flowed better.
So much more.
They changed the perspective on it, and it's just a better show.
Mm-hmm.
These days, if Parks and Rec had been put on Netflix, and it had bombed the way it did its first season, there would be no more seasons.
That's true. So yeah, streaming has evolved to be even more in that vein. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But then even shows that are great, like one that I think about a lot, Sense8
mm-hmm.
was a show on Netflix That came out when I was in...
Several years ago,
undergrad?
Yeah.
Undergrad? Mm-hmm. Grad school? No, it must have been undergrad.
Yeah, I cried when that show ended.
Yes!
So sad.
Such a good show! I think it went for 2 seasons, mm-hmm. and I will say that, in Netflix's defense, it was the most expensive show that had ever been created up until that point. Because they filmed all the location bits mm-hmm. in location.
Yeah.
So when they were all in Mexico over. City, they were in Mexico City. Hawaii. When they were in Belgium, yeah. they were in Belgium. When they were in Moscow, they mm-hmm. were in Moscow. So it's super expensive. I mean, I don't know why you couldn't just stop doing that and make the show less expensive, but whatever.
Yeah.
Also, that show's by the Twardowski sisters? Is that their last name? The folks
no.
that made the...
I used to know this.
The sisters yeah. that made The Matrix.
Yes.
Wachowski.
Wachowski, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's how you say that.
Yep, the Wachowskis.
Yeah.
The Wachowskis.
Mm-hmm. Who, when they made The Matrix, were the Wachowski brothers, but they yes. are now the Wachowski sisters.
Yes, Lana and Lily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since they followed this kind of similar pattern of... It was really expensive, but it had a huge following. Yeah. But because following doesn't really matter in streaming, you need new people,
mm-hmm.
they axed it.
Yeah. What new show is going to bring in new subscribers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need to be on the streaming service because it's only on the streaming service. Or, yeah, it's a Netflix exclusive or whatever other company. Mm-hmm.
And years ago, I mean, our whole point of leaving cable was that... you were paying for so much stuff you never watched.
Yep.
And shows that would just go on forever and ever and ever and ever. Like, mm-hmm. this is no shade to Grey's Anatomy, but Grey's Anatomy has been on for so long.
My shade that I'm going to get hate for is Friends.
Yeah, I've never, and literally never seen an episode of Friends, oh but.
Whew.
But for folks that like it, they like it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it, I know people. And that's their entire personality.
Yes.
Just Friends quotes. Like, there's an episode of Friends I've never seen that, and they look at me like I have 3 heads, and I'm like, I'm very black. That was not something that we did.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's the sadness of some shows are just not going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Other shows are going to survive because they bring in space and information or views or whatever, and we're producing more streaming services than ever.
Mm-hmm.
I just did a grand sweep last week of getting rid of so many streaming services that I was literally keeping just because of one show
right.
sometimes per streaming service.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what, it's fine. It's fine, I don't need it. And what made me mad actually now is HBO is putting some of their old shows, and by old I mean like 2010s, like mm-hmm. Insecure and stuff,
no,
on Netflix.
What?
Mm-hmm.
I love Insecure. That's so upsetting. So we end up having all these streaming services, and we're basically paying for cable anyway.
Literally that.
Literally, like
particularly ones that like here, oh 20. Ads.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Don't want ads? Well, you're gonna pay double.
Yeah.
Then you really, yeah, you're
Hulu paying for with cable. Ads, Netflix with ads. I'm like, I got this, so I didn't need ads. Oh yes, my god.
The fact there are ads should never have been allowed. Ever.
Never. It's mm-mm. so, yeah. So cable's dying, and now we're producing new internet cable, which is fun.
Interesting.
If there was a show from recent memory that you would revive and give it new life, what show would you revive?
What show would I revive? Gosh. You know, one of my favorite shows growing up was Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, such good. So good.
It's such a good show.
Will Smith was great in that.
So I want to revive that. One that I think, if we modernized it, could be a great show, but was cringy in its own way, even though it was progressive, quote-unquote, for the time, Will and Grace. It would do so much better now. Because I found that show hard to watch because I was... It wasn't really on my radar when it first came out, so I sort of watched it in hindsight and was like, oh, some of this is very, very stereotypical and kind of, like, this doesn't age well.
Mm-hmm.
But also, a lot has happened and changed in society since then, and I think it'd be cool to revamp that and have a more diverse cast and not just have it focus around like that relationship and the stereotype of the best friend to the gay guy and like their adventures and musings and drinking wine together all the time. Like, I think that show has potential of just a cool story and having other characters that actually are more developed, and yeah, that could be cool.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's still running, but they did the reboot
of Will and Grace,
yeah, a few years ago.
Oh well,
they brought back,
you know what, now that you say that, I
woman
did
and man
woman and man, right? But I'm talking like new people.
Oh yeah,
like the premise, but like different.
Yeah, they literally just did a it was literally just Will and Grace further in time.
Yeah,
I don't know if they kept it going. I mean, it's kind of the same thing that like HBO did recently with Sex and the City back in the saddle or something. Mm-hmm. It's just Sex and the City, but now everyone's slightly older. So
yes,
I don't know if they did more than one season for it or not, but
12 episode limited series during 2017 to 18. I do vaguely remember this right now. It's a revival series finale, it looks like, but yeah, I remember hearing about this, but I'm like, what's really changed? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, can I speak on it very much? No, because I didn't watch it, but I just think that there's potential and we could just do more with those kinds of storylines, develop it.
Yeah, we don't really have very good like queer connected like
mm-hmm.
sitcom-y type things.
Yeah.
Probably because that's just not something they're gonna put on
mm-hmm.
you know, mainstream television or whatever.
Like, here's my pitch right now. It's literally us in a sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
Like how we talk about how we need to vlog and all this stuff. Like just literally just us being filmed living life. That I think would make for good content because that's what people want, is something real. And there are really cool relationships out there that are not like within this very binary thing of just a tropey friendship or a tropey relationship where it's monogamous and like everyone's together forever or it ends horribly, right? Like mm-hmm. we have those tropes, but we need more. I think people want more, and there is more out there. They don't see it reflected in what they're consuming.
Yeah, or it's almost always a subplot
mm-hmm.
to someone else's story.
Yes, which ties into the movie we watched, because that was very much a thing of, why does this character not really have any character for development? And
correct.
What's going on with this person? I want to know more about them. And then the movie's over. And the credits are rolling.
Very interesting. So foreshadowing.
Yes.
I would definitely shamelessly bring back either Teen Wolf or Supernatural.
Oh, Supernatural. That's a good one.
Because
I never saw Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf was very, very teen at the time. I mean, what I liked about Teen Wolf is that I think like a good chunk of the cast has come out as queer in mm-hmm. one way or another.
Oh, cool.
Over time. And it was, again, because it was its time period, like 2012, 2013, around that time. The characters were still kind of gay or queer coded.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't as obviously stated, because you couldn't do that at the time, and for it to be on cable. But it was still a really good Supernatural type show. Like, I think that's something that teen-oriented shows don't get credit for.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, they have extremely tight plots.
Yeah.
And storylines. They are extremely tight.
And they can go into really deep topics. Really serious topics. Like, related to mental health, eating disorders, right? There's so much of that in those shows, I find.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's seen as lesser than, because it's geared for, like, mm-hmm. teens and yeah. young adults. But, like, Vampire Diaries, mm-hmm. Teen Wolf, Pretty Little Liars.
Mm.
Like, those all had really tight story arcs. And Pretty Little Liars had that really interesting story arc, too, about one of the characters being in love with her professor, who mm-hmm. was an adult and she was still in high school.
Yeah.
And how they kind of handled that in a very interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, still, I didn't need the pedophilia part of it.
Yeah.
But it was still really interesting, like, they didn't shy away from that, because it is a thing that happens.
Yeah.
Like, that type of
reality. Yeah.
Attraction is a thing, so I like them having a discussion about it. Teen Wolf actually came out a movie a couple of months ago. That we all kind of thought would be like a revival of it. So I don't know if they're actually going to do that or not, but I hope they do. It was a cute show.
Yeah, that's cute. I have to check it out. But yeah, Supernatural, that'd be cool.
Yeah, and it's Supernatural. I want to give Supernatural the ending it deserves.
Yeah.
Because it just ends with Misha Apocalypse in terms of, for folks that don't know, are not as nerdy and we're super into Supernatural. So again, spoilers, but also this show is like
ancient.
15 years old. So if you do not know what it is right now, you're not gonna watch this. But so it ends with the very queer-coded Angel confessing his love to Dean, who's one of the main brothers of the Winchester brothers. And in a now famous scene.
I can't even talk.
Castiel goes up to Dean and confesses his love. And Dean just looks at him while Castiel is sucked into literal hell. And that's the end of the show.
Oh my gosh. Do you have an alternate ending?
I would just love for them to actually explore that Dean did love Castiel.
Yeah.
But not in a sexual way.
Right.
Like, they had a deep love for each other as companions, as brothers, as friends, as soulmates in a very specific type of way that they have been there for through the worst things humanly possible. I mean, supernaturally possible.
Right.
Castiel had gone to hell multiple times to rescue Dean. But because I think of the fear of ending the show with the question that, oh, was Dean gay the whole time? They chose to do the classic bury your gays trope of, well, kill the queer character off. So there's never any question about it.
Yeah.
And it robs us of what could have been a very unique and beautiful example of male love that isn't necessarily familial or sexual.
Yeah, I agree. That would be so cool. I want them to redo it.
Yeah, they literally never will, but
we can dream.
I think more or less Jensen Ackles, who's the guy that plays Dean, has more or less said, like, no, we are never revisiting that. That is gone. We're done.
That's chapters closed.
For those people, like Jensen Ackles, who played Dean, Jared Padalecki, who played Sam, even Grey's Anatomy, Ellen Pompeo, who plays Dr. Grey herself, this is like 15 years of their lives have been this.
Yeah, they're ready to move on. That's fair.
Sometimes, I mean, I don't know if Ellen Pompeo is, honestly.
Dean is.
But my girl has been, I mean, if you can find a job where you get paid like $800,000 per episode.
Wow.
And you've been doing this for 15 years, girl,
$800,000?
Do it.
I didn't know that was the wow.
She's one of the highest paid actresses in Hollywood.
That's an amazing rate.
It's because without her, it all falls apart.
Mm-hmm. True. That's fair.
And supposedly, this is her last season, actually. The show's going to transition to be more about the generations of doctors that she raised.
Yeah.
So it's going to transition in that way. But I mean, it's miraculous how long that show has.
It's gone forever. She's an amazing actor.
She really is. She's really good. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Bros.
Bros.
And this weirdness of why does queer media have to be so spectacularly different in order for it to actually break through the crowd? And is Billy Eichner right in that statement? Who knows?
More to come.
We'll see you in a little bit.
See you soon.
And we're back.
With Bros.
Yes. Which, Bros.
Bros. I feel like this movie's a mixed bag. It started off where I was like, wait, I don't know what all the controversy's over. There's all these mixed reviews about this movie. Maybe it's going to be delightful. Maybe really funny. Like, I'm ready. It was funny here and there in the beginning. And then it just took a turn. and I wasn't so sure what we were getting into. And by the end, I was like, all right, this will be a good one to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I also think I have to position myself in this conversation. Mm-hmm. As an aromantic person, I don't like rom-coms anyway. Is the hyper-fixation on love will save your life and make you a full human is very annoying. But I was willing to give a vibe for Bros. One, because I love Billy Eichner.
Yeah.
And two, you know, supporting queer media.
Exactly. And I, as like a cis pansexual woman, generally don't watch rom-coms because they're hetero and they're very formulaic. I think it's cool to watch modern, quote-unquote, day rom-coms that maybe have some different elements to either, like, a struggle a couple's going through, family stuff, you know, just something interesting in the plot. I feel like those are harder to find sometimes. So I'm not necessarily a rom-com person, but I was hopeful that this would be, yeah, something from the queer community, for the queer community, that would be cool.
Yeah, like, you know, written for us, by us, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that was it. I was hoping this would have a different gaze.
Mm-hmm.
As I've seen queer love stories before, right? Like, we all remember Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah.
Call Me By Your Name, which I have my own gripes with that one. Why did he have to be 17? Why did it have to start with pedophilia? Why is that important? I don't know why they need to happen. Like, I know people love Call Me By Your Name and the whole romanticness of it and Timothy Chalamet.
And it's a child.
But also, child. Legally. So, don't like it. Anyway. Yeah, there's a bunch of other ones that, you know, exist where there's some sort of queer connection to it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Bros was going to be interesting in that they're older.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very clearly a point that the guy that Billy Eichner is playing, Bobby, is in his 40s.
Yeah.
Which is not something you see a lot in queer media. Usually it's very centered around young, queer, fit, able-bodied, white, gay men, or AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And this looked like he wasn't going to do either of those. So I was like, okay, super interested. Also, T.S. Madison was in it. And she's one of my favorite people on the planet.
Yes. She's amazing. Yeah. It was on paper like, okay, we've got a good setup here. Let's go. Let's see what happens.
So, I mean, at the beginning, like you were saying, I mean, the vibe was okay. It seemed like it was going to try to maybe, like, be a little bit meta and, like, take a vibe at how typically these things go, where one person changes their life entirely to fit someone else, and the only way to find love is to become an entirely different person. It seems they're going to try to really resist that flow, and yeah, that's not what happened.
Yeah, very much not. Like, there was commentary about it, but then the things were just happening. It's like, wait, what? That's not how I thought this was going to go. Why is it becoming the trope?
And I don't know if that's partially because that is actually how the majority of people understand romance. A romance story is going to romance story because that's what we think romance is. Making pretty drastic changes of yourself to fit another person.
And when they say they're no longer interested, love bombing them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. You've made it very clear you don't want to have anything to do with me. Let me crash an event and give you a grand gesture. I thought that was very, actually, something I'm used to seeing in hetero rom-coms that I was very disappointed in. Of, wait, why this? I don't like that. Even if it is sort of the status quo in relationships generally, I don't like it.
Yeah, I think I left Bros thinking that this was not a queer love story. This was a love story with queer people. A queer love story would have tried to find a different way to talk about love from a non-heteronormative stance.
Right.
And that wasn't this. And I don't know if it was meant to be that. My sense is that it wasn't. It was meant to be what it was.
Yeah.
And it wasn't for me.
Yeah, it wasn't for me. I felt disappointed. Like, it could have been something different. I just wanted it to be, I wanted it to go further. Like, I felt like there were these glimmers and moments. A little bit of Velma vibes. What I mean by that is in Velma, I had like one laugh in the whole 7 episodes where I was like, oh, that was actually funny. I enjoyed that one joke. The sentiment from Bros that I liked was when they were having a conversation about monogamy and like, hey, you know, I don't know that we're on the same page with like how we want to navigate this relationship. And it could have been this awesome conversation, but it was just, oh, this isn't for me. I can't do this. Oh, okay. That's all right. And then just nothing. And then they ended up breaking up. I'm like, there could have been a conversation around how we're different and where we want to go with this and communication. Mm-hmm. And it just did the thing that I think so many movies do where it's like, well, no, we're not going to go there. And I was like, that was an opening. And maybe that's still progress and still cool that they're bringing some of these points up. You know, I'm not discounting that. And I wanted more. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, cool opportunity. Like you said at the end of that show, wow, they had an opportunity and it went super different. Mm-hmm. I wish that conversation would have been had because I think a lot of people could relate to that. Of, hey, I felt this way at this time. I've tried this out. It's actually not for me. Or can we have a discussion on, you know, how we might still do this together? Or is this a no-go? Where does this go? And I think so many relationships suffer because we don't have those conversations. And I think we need that in our movies and shows.
Yeah, this one did a lot of, there was a lot of growth that you didn't see. Mm-hmm. It happened, a lot of it happened off screen.
Right.
Which is a very interesting choice of, we never saw what it was that made Bobby want to change his mind about being very anti-relationship, super self-sufficient, and da-da-da. Just at a certain point, he was like, I think I like this person. Mm-hmm. And was like, okay, that's a thing that's happening. and then the guy he was dating, or wanted to date, whatever, it was heavily insinuated that he's struggling with some very strong internalized homophobia, but that's also never addressed. Mm-hmm. Just at a certain point, he's just like, I gonna go be with this guy now who's kind of mean. That's what we're doing. And then we have a musical number and the movie ends. I'm like, so we dissected nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing was dissected in this movie. It just, you're still mean, you're probably still homophobic, so I don't know what, again, like, it's the same thing with Velma. I don't understand what perspective this was trying to say, and I don't understand what message I was supposed to take from it.
Yeah, we were halfway through the movie, we're like, wait, what's the plot? Where exactly is this going? It's like, oh, so it's really about them, they're gonna break up, or maybe they'll get back together, all right, we have a general plot, but also there was potential subplots or other parts of the plot that just never really happened. Mm-hmm.
And not a single side character had a story.
No, they didn't have lives and richness and their own relationships. Or if you got a glimpse into just generally like who they were with, but no other context. Mm-hmm. They're just existing around the other main characters.
Yeah, at the very beginning, we get introduced to a couple who has decided they're now in an open relationship and they have a third person, and Billy Eichner's character Bobby goes on this weird diatribe about, what are you, a throuple? What does it even mean? What is that? Aren't you too old to be doing that? Like, it kind of sets up the same thing with Velma of, but I don't understand what your viewpoint here is. Like, is your viewpoint to say that young people are doing too much in relationship? Like, where's classic, I have one person, I want to be with that one person, I want to do that, that's not accepted anymore. But then he's like, but I don't want to be with anyone because I don't want to do any of this. And we have no idea why. Like, we don't even know his motivation of, like, what has happened to you.
Yeah, that you just don't want
that. You're like this. Mm-hmm. He's just a mean queer, which is its own really annoying, hurtful trope.
Exactly. He's grumpy, he's closed off, and a lot of the reviews on this movie was just that his character was way too much, you know, from people within the community and outside of the community, of just, I wish that character would have toned it down, which, you know, is that hurtful stereotype of somebody being too loud or too much. And that was a point that I wish would have been developed more and talked more about. because it was spoken of when, you know, he was meeting his love interest family of like, hey, you're basically telling me to be quiet, to be less me. That's really hurtful. But also then pretty much right away, like, but also I'm a lot, you know, mm-hmm. I get it. Like, yeah, the whole let me change. And just internal conflict about that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that there was a lot going on in this movie. And I think depending on who watches it, they're going to take things a different way. They'll take the character Bobby saying that about the throuple as like, oh my gosh, yeah, young people are just, you know, doing too much. It's hard enough to be with one person, much less more, which is very much just a pervasive societal, inside or outside of the community, sentiment mm-hmm. of being with one person is tough. Why would, how does it even work? And that just sort of limits the way that people can be in relationship with multiple people, because that can look a billion different ways. It was very, like, close-minded. So maybe it was, the my interpretation was, it was a setup to sort of give his point of view and why he's sort of stuck in his thinking and how it would be a shift to be anything but monogamous. Wow, I'm even with one person, not being monogamous? Like, that's asking a lot of me, because mm-hmm. I think that's just a lot, just being with another human. So I really must like you if I'm willing to, like, give this a go, because I've already set up that that's just not for me. That's for other people. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, but it's still, we'll never know. I'm still confused.
Yeah, it was just never examined. Mm-mm. It was just there. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's a
thing.
Cool. yeah, and I mean it. And again, this is coming from the positionality of an aromantic person. It once again does my least favorite thing that not even just romantic movies do, but pretty much all movies do this, and people do it all the time. It heavily insinuates that Bobby's friendships are not enough for him to be a happy human. Like, if he were just to devote time to his friendships, that wouldn't even be enough. Like, he must find a partner in order to be a fulfilled human. There is no room for, maybe that's just not the person that you are.
Right.
Maybe you are just, you are someone that is perfectly fine vibing by yourself. You have your close friendships, you have your family, that's what you do. Mm-hmm. No options for that.
No.
And in fact, heavily insinuate there's something wrong with him.
Yes,
because much. He's been in, he because now he's 40 and still hasn't found the one human to complete his life. And as just even before I figured out I was aromantic, this is my least favorite, laziest plot point.
it's so true. And you're right, I think that they made him out to be just so unhappy and miserable, and that was like the main reason why. It's like, oh, if you could just find love, just let love in your heart, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just gonna make your life so much better. Like, you have a hardened heart, you know, all these sort of, yeah, I don't know, canned quotes on love.
Yeah, I came to a realization not too long ago that one of the reasons I like watching shows made for kids a lot, like Disney movies, like Moana, Encanto, stuff like that, is there's no forced romance.
Oh, yeah.
In these.
Yes, we talked about that. We were talking the other day about Disney movies and Little Mermaid, and I grew up with that movie, and I was like, oh, wait, it's all about, like, literally changing who you are to be with a man. I want to be literally a different, I don't want to be a mermaid, I want to be a human so I can be with that guy. It's like, wait, when you think about that, that's all the opposite of what you're saying. And I think that we have come a long way with those movies where it is a lot more about familial relationships, friendship, and just different types of relationship. And it's not that maybe even someone has a crush or it's like a flirtation, but it's not, oh, well, we have to be together now, or make that like the plot point.
Could just, or my life exist. Is just completely ruined.
Right.
Because I don't have you. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I don't know. Like, yeah. I was talking to, so there's a show on Netflix, and I can't remember the name of it. It'll come to me. But basically the point of the show is that there's like a secret, you know, society that works behind the scenes of the government, and they like help take care of, you know, conspiracies and whatever. It's an adult comedy, kind of like Family Guy.
Yeah.
Like that. But there's a subplot in the first season. The main character, Reagan, has been single most of her life, and she's really driven. She's really focused on her career, and she has these really great friends, and she's got just really great people, like friends around her that really believe in her and support her. And she's got this one friend who they kind of set up as it's almost like a romantic thing, but then it kind of takes a turn where he's like, no, you are my person, you are my best friend, I love you, and da da da. So at the end of the first season, that's how it ends. They're just kind of like, we're just really good friends. The entire second season is based on Reagan ends up getting a boyfriend for the first time ever. And at a certain point, they end up not really working. And which then proceeds off this whole thing where she loses all of her confidence. She loses all of her drive. She loses all of her focus. Like, it all just goes down the toilet because she can't be with this one guy. And there's this scene that really sticks out on my head of her friend, his name is Brett, comes up to her and he's like, but you matter to me. I love you. I care for you. And like, this really, really sentimental moment. And they hug and whatever. And Brett turns around and walks away. And Reagan takes out her phone to see if the guy texted her.
Yeah.
And when she sees he didn't, she starts crying. And I'm like, this is the thing that we do.
Yeah.
We have made this strong female character's entire story arc shift, and now she's not even the main point of her story arc. Because you're not actually asking questions about her. You're asking questions about, is he ever going to come back and talk to her?
He's completely the main character.
Decentralized the main character.
Yeah, stolen from her.
And also, if I was Brett, I would feel absolutely awful.
That's so hurtful.
That I was there for you for an entire season. And it doesn't matter. Because this random guy that you met that you can have sex with, he matters so much more than me because you want to see him naked. Like, I don't even, and this is where the aromantic kicks in. So I'm like, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's about that connection. And there's so much love in that moment that they had. But then in that behavior, it's like lost on her because she's just like clearly prioritizing. Well, it's not this kind of love. Like, I need this to feel better about my life and myself. And that's just, it's sad, but it is very true. And I think that I think a disservice that we do when we just talk about love generally. It's like, oh, you know, it's never too late to love, or like, you'll get your shot, you know, you'll have your time, you'll find that soulmate. And just don't even start on soulmates. That's like how you feel about that scenario with the friendship relationship is how I feel when I hear about soulmates and like your twin flame. And
it's also a lazy trope.
It is so lazy. And I feel like the progress we've made, which is not really progress, it's just repackaged stuff, is, well, you can have more than one soulmate.
Yeah.
You can do this to yourself many times.
Yes.
It's like, wait, that's not fixing it. Mm-hmm. It's just more suffering of, this is the thing I need to be happy and fulfilled and to feel good about myself. It's BS.
But it's other people.
Yeah.
And it's specifically a very specific other people.
And type of relationship.
Yes. And if there is not this ultimate level intimacy of that, I both can be seen with you in public and see you naked, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
It's not a full, deep love. Like, it's like there's like a layers of love. And it's like, that's the deepest kind of love. You know, where you could just be vulnerable in every kind of way. It's like, you know damn well that there's relationships where you might see someone naked at home and you're way more vulnerable with your best friend. That person doesn't really know you, right? That doesn't actually do anything.
Yeah.
It's mechanics.
It's, yes, and it's that part of, like, you know, how do we decide to elevate a certain person over maybe people you've known your entire existence? But this new, brand new person, because presumably they're going to be with you forever. I mean, the other people thought they were going to be with you forever, too. But they're going to be with you forever, and they want to touch your naughty bits. They get elevated above everyone else.
Yeah.
They are the primary relationship. And I just don't get it. I just cannot comprehend how we make this decision. mostly because I don't do it, but I also but I see people that don't do it. I see people that mm-hmm. work really hard to maintain relationships mm-hmm. that aren't just my relationship is the ultimate thing in my life.
Yep.
With my romantic partner. That's the ultimate thing in my life. Mm-hmm. I worked for that. That's all I care about. And I see people work on it, but I don't see examples of it mm-hmm. in media.
Yeah.
I rarely ever see an example.
It's extremely of rare.
Someone that keeps their partner mm-hmm. and keeps their friends.
Yeah.
And doesn't make their friends feel like second-class citizens in their relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. I have this standing thing with my partner. I'm sorry. Yeah, the whole week is blocked off. Mm-hmm. We need our quality time.
Mm-hmm.
What about everyone else in your life?
Yeah.
They just fade away. How are you going to nurture those relationships? Like, it's just, to me, the math isn't mathing. And so.
But the insinuation is you don't mm-hmm. need them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. That's the underlying message, is that if you are connected enough with your partner and you love your partner enough, you don't need these other people, because that person should be your best friend, your sex bunny, your financial advisor, your car mechanic, your laundress, your cook, your entertainment, your nanny. They should be absolutely everything that has ever existed. We don't know other people.
Oh, I'm cringing so hard. I must fall somewhere in the middle. Like, I'm not aromantic, but that just is so gross to me. And I've never understood that. And I feel like there have been times in the past where I've been in a relationship and I have mostly struggled, not now, my current relationship, thankfully, but in the past struggled with satisfying that person with my time, of feeling like this sort of demanding nature of like, well, you know, I'm priority. And it's mm-hmm. like, well, okay, yeah, like, you're my partner, you have to be the priority. And then it was almost impossible to spend enough time with my friends, because I have several friends. That was very frustrating. Mm-hmm. I was like, wait, I hate this.
Mm-hmm.
This got to be another way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think most people function this way
mm-hmm.
because it's not functional.
Yeah.
But that's what we're shown.
Right, right.
And like, how many times do you see people on TV or like in movies or in stories where like, they're couples and they just don't have friends.
They don't have friends, or they do the thing, I've been guilty of it, where you just have all your friends over. Mm-hmm. You don't really leave the house mm-hmm. much. Everyone just comes over. So then you can just, like, everyone hang out at once, because, like, there's just no way, time-wise, to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, sometimes we're working multiple jobs. We're going to school, right? Like, there's limited time. But then some of us get stuck in that. And you're right. Like, when I'm thinking back to movies or different things, it is very much like when that phase of life changes, it's maybe even someone has kids, then they're hanging out with other parents,
right?
Their friends that are not parents, like, we're just sort of in different places in life. Sorry. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you could drop by while I'm doing this with my family, but mm-hmm. You want to do that? It's like, where do I fit? Right. Mm-hmm. It's because this phase of life has changed, or like my context has changed, right? Oh, I'm not single. My context has changed.
Yeah.
Like, I'm with someone now. We're in a committed relationship.
My experience has been frequently, I've always been a friend. It's not in a relationship. And my experience is either I become a non-person, as in no one, like, I don't have a space in this at all. Like, your partner has subsumed the entire space that I used to fill.
Mm.
And that was my entire purpose, was to hold that space until you found a partner. And now you have one, so I don't need to be in that space anymore. Or I become the group friend, where mm-hmm. I haven't spent time with you as solo in months.
Right.
I have only seen you in group context. I don't even know what's happening in your life. I just get a text every once in a while of like, hey, we're all doing this thing. I'm like, cool, great. Or I'm the therapist.
Oh.
You don't actually like this person. You don't like this person at all. But this person has decided, you've decided that this is your last chance. And it's now my job as your best friend to make this relationship work. Those are the three most common options.
That last one hurt.
Yeah.
That sounds exhausting and really hurtful. I mean, they're all not great, but that last one? Yikes.
Yep. Recently, I have friends that are trying much more intentionally
mm-hmm.
to not do that thing.
Yeah.
And really working on, like, the, you know,
mm-hmm.
I know I'm not priority in these relationships. I realize that. But there's a difference between shifting out of priority and just being a non-person.
Right. I mean, just that word non-person. Like, do you feel invisible in those relationships? Like, you're just not really even checked in with? What does a non-person feel like?
To feel invisible would insinuate that I'm actually there. So to not be not there. Observed. I'm not even part of the relationship. Like, I have no relationship anymore. Mm-hmm. Because there's no space. And part of it is, I think people... Mm-hmm. And I will make allowance at the beginning of relationships for mm-hmm. that to happen. That right. just that you know, the lust phase happens, the new relationship energy kicks in.
Right.
Fine. Yeah. Do what you do. That's fine.
Makes sense. You're going to be hanging out.
Mm-hmm. It's the folks where that never wears off.
Yeah.
Or it's just communicated that, like, I don't have time for you. Mm-hmm. Or even the one that hurts the most, when I'm given appreciation for exiting the relationship.
Who is this
to person? Allow them to make space.
I'm getting protective
for
of
this
you.
Other person.
Who hurt you? What's the address?
This is I've had so many friends do this just over time. Oh. Because that's just it's par for the course, really. That's how we're taught to do it.
It's true, but I feel like it's sad. I feel like we could be doing better.
At least communicating
and having conversation around, hey, yeah. this is what I'm doing. This is my choice. Mm-hmm. I have this new person in my life. I still care about you. How am I doing with communicating that? Mm-hmm. Is this working? Right? Like, kind of back to the bros conversation around, is monogamy for me? Is it not? Like, have a conversation, right? Mm-hmm. On a relationship changing or needs or wants. I think we overcomplicate some of this stuff, and it's actually really simple. It's just, are you willing to have a conversation? And backing up further, are you aware a conversation needs to be had? I think that's what's really mm-hmm. hurtful mm-hmm. and would make me feel like a non-person of, you didn't even think we needed to talk about this. You just yeah. live in your life and not even thinking about how it impacts me. Mm-hmm. That is so hard.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think, you know, you kind of get back to bros too, of like, until we start showing people other stories of why you need to be checking in with your friends, mm-hmm. people aren't going to think about it.
Yeah.
We're too programmed. Find your person. Produce a family. Like, the phrase to me, you know, when people say, oh, we're going to start a family. Mm. Well, shit. I thought we were family. Hmm. Or like, oh, I finally found my little family. Like, oh, okay, so I was never a part of that. That was never how you saw me. Wow. Okay. That's information. Mm-hmm. But that's not how we're taught to think about things. We're yeah. not taught to think about mm-mm. your friends can be your family. Right. And you can have a partner mm-hmm. that is the most important thing in your life, but you can also have friendships.
Yeah.
That have existed, in most cases, far longer, mm-hmm. that are also vital parts of your life.
Yeah. And I wonder, because there was diversity in this movie, right? And I think that the trend is that is getting more diverse. And I think, when I think about relationships in the States, and this is kind of the lens of when we're having these conversations, when I'm speaking on my own stuff, it's relationships I've had with other humans in the U.S., mm-hmm. When I was overseas, I often didn't know who was actually like a blood relative. Mm-hmm. Someone stopping by and I'm like, oh, I have all these aunts or all these uncles, or is that guy a neighbor or are we related? We might be. I don't know. And I really enjoy and miss that. And I feel like that's partly what's at play here is this, an idea of what the American family is and who is family and who's not. Mm-hmm. And even just the way that I said, like, are you blood related or not? Like, that's very much like, I didn't really grow up with that overseas, but in the States, it's like, oh, are you blood relatives? It's like, well, no, but it's mm-hmm. like my brother, quote unquote, or it's like my aunt. And it's just interesting too, mm-hmm. the cultural piece in there.
Yeah. Like, where I grew up in the South, it's a thing. You can be elevated into familyhood mm-hmm. at a certain point. But that's not the classic American nuclear family, mm-hmm. two parents, one and a half kids, and
the dog,
and it's a very isolating structure.
Yeah,
your family takes care of your family, and right. that's the goal. Mm-hmm. Produce your own little thing, and you take care of it, and that's it. that was it. And I think we're working on trying to adjust that, and that there's multiple ways to have families and multiple ways to have relationships and stuff. So I think, you know, we're moving towards it. And I think part of it is like these conversations of like, do you notice the tropes that you see in movies? Do you notice how often it's the exact same movie over and over and over and over? Find one person, forget your friends. Find one person, forget your friends. Find one person, forget your friends.
Yeah, feel terrible about yourself till you find your person. When you find your person, you magically have happiness that was unlocked. Fixed. Yeah, like you've leveled up.
You are now a full human. You're allowed to. People stop talking nasty about you. You have a partner now. You've proved that you can be loved.
Oh my goodness! Like,
it's kind of these things of like, are you noticing the media you're consuming, and are you noticing how? What are your relationships looking like? So, you know, we ask you, listeners.
Yeah.
How have you noticed this happening in your world? Do you find yourself being a person that the second you get a partner, you're out. You're gone. Mm-hmm. That's your entire world. Yeah. Or do you find yourself working really, really hard to maintain your relationships after you, you know, find someone that you think is going to become your romantic person for the rest of forever? And if you haven't thought about it, maybe do that.
Let us know.
So, there's a good chance that you were wrong about something today. But that's okay. We still love you.
We do. Always and forever. Mm-hmm. We have our own tropes.
We do have our own tropes.
We will love you always and forever. And your opinion's probably wrong.
Most likely it was wrong. Mm-hmm. And maintaining our wonderful parasocial relationship. If you have anything you would like to have correct about your opinions, email us at fixmyopinion@gmail.com.
And until next time, abbiento.